Well, let's get started. First of all, we should review action items. We have no action items, okay? So, let's go down to presentations. Today we have 7 informational presentations like this, and each presentation, a presenter will come here and make a presentation. Well, first, before that, we should take notes. Please use microphone if you ask questions, because this session is broadcasted to the internet, so you should use microphone, please. Okay, so let me call first speaker. First speaker is Art Polite Epinik. He's going to make a presentation on IPv6 update.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Art from APNIC, and I'll present about IPv6 allocation status update. The contents of this presentation are purely statistics about RIR's allocations from IANA, RIR's allocations to LIRs or ISP, APNIC allocations and assignments details, member assignments registration in the database, and a snapshot of global IPv6 routing table. These are the current RIR's allocations, number of slash 23s. RIPE NCC has 198, APNIC has 65, RN has 12, BLACKNIC has 2, and APNIC has 1 allocation. And these are the RIR's allocations to LIRs and ISP. So far, APNIC has 237, RIPE NCC has 532, APNIC has 13, LACNIC has 54, RN has 185. And allocations of APNIC by economies, Japan has 90 allocations, followed by Korea 35, Taiwan 24, China 17, Australia 13, and the rest of the countries are catching up. And this is the annual allocations. For 2006, we have about 6 allocations as of January. And as you notice, from 2002, we have a big jump. This is because of the minimum allocation of slash 32 has been introduced, and then the slash 35 folders were allowed to get an upgrade of slash 32 without further documentations. And allocations by sizes. So since APNIC minimum allocation is slash 32, so you will notice that the big allocations are slash 32. We have 217, And so far, we still have 4 out of 6 SLAS 35. They haven't upgraded it yet, and 2 of them has been returned. And we have 3 SLAS 20s, and we have SLAS 21, SLAS 22, and up to SLAS 30. IX assignments. Previously, we are assigning SLAS 64s. So 4 of these are SLAS 64s, and the rest are SLAS 48. So we have 6 from Australia, 3 from Japan, Korea 2, Indonesia 2, and then New Zealand, and the rest got one assignment. And these are the critical assignments, mostly for top-level domain operators per country, NIRs, and I think it includes the root server as well. So Japan has 4 assignments, Australia has 2, Korea has 2, and the others got 1 assignment.
1 month? No, 1 tenth.
And these are the assignments registered in the database. So mostly it's last 48, and it's interesting to see that there are 3,000 SLAS 40s registered, and it's actually from one organization. They're registering mostly their infrastructure by SLAS 40s. This is the snapshot of IPv6 routing table as of January 2006. So it's mostly SLAS 32. And the SLAS 16 here is the 624. And there's one organization announcing SLAS 19. And there's also one organization announcing SLAS 64. Okay. If you're interested with which IP block or IPv6 has been assigned to which RIRs, you can check the IANA website. And also, APNIC has statistics about the AS number assignments, IPv4 and IPv6 assignments allocation as well. So you can check the link. Are there any questions?
Art, I have one.
Yeah.
You know, APNIC guy repeatedly asks to the people to register, you know, assignments to WHOIS database. So, is it increasing or you show just number, but
this one?
Yeah. I don't know this number is increasing or not.
Yeah, it's actually increasing because last year the SLAS 40s is around 1,000.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Very good.
So yeah, it's increasing.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Second speaker is Sanjaya APNIC. He will make a presentation on IP6.int deprecation project report.
Right. This is a project update of a proposal that got approved in the last APNIC meeting. The proposal was presented in the DNS operation SIG and got approved. So this is just an update on what's the progress of the implementation of that proposal. This is the overview. Start with the background, and then just a reminder of what the proposal is and the project status, and then the questions and answer. Right, the background of this proposal is because the use of the IP6.in domain has actually been deprecated with the RFC 3152 in 2001, so it's a long time ago. And then there's a new, relatively new RFC 4159 in August 2005 that says because it has been deprecated, then the RIRs are no longer required to provide the IP6.int service. And the fact that APNIC also has stopped accepting new IP6.int domains as of June 2004, and the query rate is are still there, then we need to consider an orderly shutdown of the service, actually. So the proposal says, it is proposed that APNIC cease devoting resources to support the operation of this deprecated domain and the cutoff date to be determined jointly with the other RIR. And also the proposal contain all the steps to for an orderly cutoff with that consists of notifying parties, making public announcements of the projects, and then notify the root IP6.in to remove APNIC delegation on the cutoff date, and actually stopping the service. So this report is actually planned already in the last meeting that we are going to make an update on APNIC 21. Right, here's our observations and statistics. We are seeing that most IP6 data flow on IP6, both ARPA and INT, is actually to our server, majority of them are basically just a zone refresh and notification from masters on update. We have two measurement points.
Ooh, here's the man, Clarence. Thank you. This is about, from the ops and ISP and RIR perspective of a PKI, and this is different than what Steve was telling you at the keynote. And just in case you wonder what Eid al-Fitr is, it's the last day of Ramadan when you go with your family. And
Randy,
the key thing is why I'm using it is the breaking of the fasting period.
I thought, where the heck is Randy? I didn't see it.
Evil habits I want to break are the unknown quality of the who is data. Unknown is a nice word. The unknown quality of the IRR data.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There is no formal means of verifying if a new customer really owns the IP space they're asking me to announce. There is no formal means of verifying routing announcements. Okay? I want an end to this stuff. Okay? There's a big
so
gap
do we.
In routing
so
security,
do we.
And it's not router security, worrying about attacking a router. That is a major problem. But it's that protocols, legally, the BGP protocol can be used to tell lies, route hijacking, et cetera, et cetera. I did a JANOG presentation on this.
Thanks, Gary.
I'll also do it in the afternoon in the routing SIG, an updated version of this, talking about routing security. But
should I just continue?
Do
you think you can handle the
certificates.
Interference?
So, what's the PKI?
Okay.
It's the public key infrastructure, and it's a database that can be a single database, could be distributed, et cetera, et cetera. It contains the certificates identifying the RIRs, identifying the ISPs and end sites, and it contains the delegations of IP addresses and the delegate of AS numbers in a formal sense. Wrong button. Oh, great. I guess we had to deal with that. Okay.
Now it's my turn.
Good. Contestation. In other words, somebody saying, formally, no. That entity owns this IP space or this AS, specifies the identity, i.e. the public key of the recipient. I'm failing?
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that. Okay, so we have two measurement points, 2 days in November, so late 2005, and then another 6 days measurement in February 2006. Here's the observation we made. This is the total number of queries we're seeing in our traffic analysis. This is the zone update, and this is just a notification from master to the secondaries. So now this, the one I mark here, is the actual query from end users. So it is really, really small compared to the zone transfer and the notifications. Now I'm going to zoom into that, and it turns out that actually the in November 2005 there's a bug in a Linux version that does some PTR queries, but this is an anomaly. The blue color is the IP6 ARPA lookup, which is it's okay. But the NS query itself and the A query is just under half a query per minute. So it's much less than the 5 query per minute that we observed when we first come up with a proposal. So it's now down to half query per minute for the end user queries. So how many queries worldwide? We're seeing 30 in November 2005. We see 36 queries in the February 2006 measurement, which is 6 days. Remember that in November 2005 is 2 days measurement, and February 2006 is 6 days measurement. It's down to 29 queries only. Compare that with the IP6.ARPA queries, which is much larger. So it looks to us like it's a healthy decline of IP6.in queries. Right, on to the coordination work. We have been spending some time consulting with the other RIRs and NIR. Meeting with the other RIRs has resulted in an agreement to coordinate the cutoff date as a global activity. So we are going to all the RIR. Will stop operation at the same time. We will collaborate in the public communication so everyone will know, and also technical activities. With the NIR, primarily with JPNIC, we consult their community if there is any issues or scheduling conflicts. It seems that after a few consultation, we pretty much agreed that June 1st, 2006 would be the cutoff date. And we are planning to then, now with the date has been set, we will start talking with the root IP6.in, which is held by Bill Manning. So this is the schedule. We are here now. Cut-off date on the 1st of June. There will be a lot of basically communication and notification because there are not many technical things to do other than close to the cut-off date. We will notify Bill Manning about 1 week before and then stop the operation. Most of the work is basically communicating with the secondaries, the end users. If we still see end users sending queries to us, we will ask them, you know, why are you still using IP6.in and so on. That's the update. Any questions? Any objections about the target date, cutoff date, 1st of June?
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
You have a plan to notify to the third party after this meeting, and how, with what method you will notify to you?
Look at the addresses that sends the queries and look up who is, see if we can mail the network owner. I mean, it's a hit and miss. I mean, we will just do our best. We may not actually reach the end user that queries us, but at least that's the plan. Yeah. Does that answer the question? Yeah.
Question. Is the cutoff day June 1st decided or subject to change?
It's pretty much decided.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're fixed on 1st of June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Shin, can you confirm that is actually the understanding we have, right? 1st of June? Yeah. Cool. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. Before my presentation, we have urgent announcement. Okay. An Apricot 2006 conference bag is missing. Okay. Someone may pick up a wrong bag from the area with chairs toward registration desk in level 2. If you have someone else's bag by mistake, please bring it to the Apricot registration area as soon as possible. Would you make a look at your bag? Okay. Is it your own bag? Please make a double check, please. Okay, the owner's business card, Zita Wenzel, is inserted to the bag's name card is on the bag. Okay. If you have one, please go to registration desk as soon as possible. Thank you very much. Okay. So my presentation. Technical consideration on deprecation of IP6.int. I'm Kazuya Yamamoto, IIJ. So, background. As Sanjaya said, IP6.int will be deprecated on 1st June 2006. Okay? A rumor said that deprecation of IP6.int will make reverse mapping worse. And it is true that some application servers have ill behavior when reverse mapping is a mess. We repeatedly experienced that, you know, when we log in with a SSH to SSH server, this login and SSH daemon make a reverse lookup, then if DNS server hold to reply answer, login OK also hold, then our login is hold. This kind of things actually happen if and only if reverse mapping is a mess. So we need a technical consideration on whether or not deprecation of IP6.int will make, you know, reverse mapping worse. But then, what does worse mean? I think there is two criteria. First one is DNS server response time will be longer. This is the cause of SSH problem. And the other one is hostname will be unavailable. Okay. The interesting question is which application use reverse mapping? Fortunately, most clients do not. And some servers do, like SSH daemon. Okay. And for what do servers use reverse mapping? First one is logging hostname. Okay. And the other is authentication. This is categorized to tools. One is existence of reverse mapping. So server make use of existence of reverse mapping for authentication. And the other is consistency between forward mapping and reverse mapping. But this is too detailed for this presentation. So please keep in mind, one is logging hostname, and the other is authentication. Okay. So, after 1st June 2006, what will happen? As Sanjaya explained, roughly speaking, a name error will be always returned when names under IP6.int are looked up. Okay? This is too technical. So, what does it mean? It seems that no new name delegation will be generated. Rather, the number of name delegation will probably decrease because bad effect from lower ill-mated domain will disappear. So, fortunately, DNS server response time will be shorter. Okay? In case where hostname is resolved, and even in case where hostname is not resolved, okay? So DNS server response time will be shorter anyway, in any case. So fortunately, an SSH server does not hold your login. So, are we all happy? Unfortunately, the answer is no. Side effects would happen. Remember that hostname will be unavailable in some cases. Let me explain this one in detail. Most servers use resolver library on local machine. And IP6int only resolver will not able to resolve reverse mapping after 1st June. So if server is using this kind of resolver called IP6.int-only, hostname is always available. But please note again that the response time will be shorter than before. Resolvers are categorized into four: IP6.int-only, IP6.ARPA-only, IP6.int-then IP6.ARPA. This means that this kind of resolver first try to reverse mapping to IP6.int. If hostname is resolved, the query is stopped. Okay. If hostname is not available, then give a next try to IP6.ARPA. Okay. The last one is IP6.ARPA then IP6.int. Okay. Only IP6.int-only resolver have a bad effect. Reverse lookup always will fail after 1st June 2006. All other libraries don't have bad effect. Okay. So question is, how many IP6.int-only resolver are out there? Fortunately, most recent resolver are not IPv6.int-only. But some old resolver are IPv6.int-only. We cannot, cover all resolver, but while the project pick up, enumerate IPv6.int-only resolvers this kind. Probably the most impact one is Windows Server 2003 without update. Okay, so if you are using Windows Server 2003, please do Windows update to get IP6.ARPA-only resolver. Okay, if you usually do Windows update, you don't have to care at all. Okay. So technical expectation: if server is using IP6.int-only resolver for logging, okay, IPv6 addresses are recorded in log instead of host names. Okay. This is not so bad. And hostname-based authentication. So access from some legitimate clients is denied, unfortunately. But I should emphasize that these side effects are rare and not fatal. That is our expectation, and to check our expectation is true or not, we did the field test. This is done by V6 Fix Working Group of Wider Project since 18th January. What we did is make our server provide separate views. So this server return name error to a wider community when the query for reverse mapping from wide community. Then to other internet, hostname will return. Okay. So this is emulation for after 1st June. Okay. Fortunately, no side effect has been observed at this moment. So I cannot say this is evidence to that thing happen. That's not will not happen. But we can believe that side effects are rare and not fatal somehow. Okay. This is my last slide summary. Our conclusion is a situation will be better after 1st June 2006. Okay. But side effects would happen, but they are rare and not fatal. So if you are using IPBISC only resolver, please update your resolver. Okay. And for more information, please look at this page indexed indicated by this URL. Thank you. Any questions?
Shin Yamasaki from JPNIC. You mentioned Windows Server 2003 is somewhat critical. Can you pinpoint like which fix or which service pack should be required for IPv6.ARPA?
We write a project made a question to technical guy in Microsoft. He answered that please do fully updated. Okay? I don't know which update fixed this one. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, just I thought some people cannot apply the or always apply the latest patch, so if they can know the baseline of the fix or service pack, that would be good. But if Microsoft doesn't tell you, yeah, there's no other way, I guess.
I guess that is for, you know, user side. If you are using some specific application on your Windows, it is not possible to fully update. But this is server side, and server should be, you know, updated because of security or something. Okay, so fully update is always a good thing in server side, I guess.
Hi, Kazu Sanjaya from APNIC. Mm-hmm. First off, thanks for a very good explanation of the potential impact. I think it's a positive message that we're receiving from you. I'm just curious, did you, because the Japanese community seems to be using IPv6 more than probably the rest of the world. I was wondering if you have done an analysis like what we done at looking at the query rates of the IPv6.int somewhere in your lab?
Yeah. You are talking about statistics, right?
Yeah.
We are the project. Project already did the statistics, and please, I did not explain because you explained, okay? And the situation is the same, and that statistics is available in this page, so please look at this one.
Jordi Palet, regarding the Windows 2003 service pack, I believe in Windows 2003 there is not an isolated package to solve this, but you get it sorted out, if I am not wrong, with service pack 1. Okay, so obviously, as you said, being a server, you should apply everything because of security issues, but service pack 1, as I can remember, solved this.
Okay, so we do fully updated, right? Jody? Okay.
George Michelson from APNIC. Thank you very much for this presentation. I think it was very interesting to see a totally independent measure of behavior confirm what we also felt would happen. I would like to suggest that even though you believe this is a safe activity and we believe this is a safe activity, our responsibility to the community is still to alert people and to be ready to react if there turn out to be problems that we did not foresee. I do not think this will happen, but our responsibilities as custodians of the reverse address space is that we must be ready to advise people how to move on if they wind up having problems. In particular, an earlier measure that was made in the wide community suggested there is a functional split of DNS in the V6 community. The corporate sector keeps up to date with patches, runs more new software, and so are quite likely to have code which will do the right thing. And the small business cable home user sector tends not to do this and is at a higher risk of firstly not understanding the problem and secondly running older machines. But the other side of the problem is these people are much less likely to trigger problems like the SSH problem. They would not ordinarily be doing services that demand functional reverse DNS. And as you have said, because we are terminating delegation, there will be an NX domain. Instead of it being a lame response, it will be a does not exist response, which is a much faster termination. So I still believe this is safe and will have the good effect, but I do think, particularly that the Japanese community, you maybe have the shared responsibility with us to be ready to help and advise people. But this is a very good body of work, and thank you for presenting.
And I think we can do two things. One is write a document. So I will update our document, but because my native tongue is Japanese, can I ask you, proofread in, Okay, thank you very much. Second thing, probably Yamasaki-san will explain, but APNIC can ask to NOIL. Then NOIL actually asks IIJ, and IIJ is asking now customers. So such a hierarchy should work. Okay? Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. So next speaker is Yamasaki-san from JPNIC. His presentation title is Progress Report for IP6.INT Deprecation in Japan. his projector is not friendly to, his laptop is not friendly to laptop, so he'll make a presentation using PDF. Okay?
Okay, sorry for wasting time. For some reason, this projector doesn't like my laptop, so let me use another laptop. My name is Shin Yamasaki from JPNIC. This is the supplemental presentation for Yamamoto-san's presentation. This is just reporting the progress of the IP6.int deprecation within Japan. So background is, as you know, not all IP address ranges are managed by JPNIC, but last year, several IPv6 addresses transferred from APNIC to JPNIC. Then all of those ranges have reverse DNS in APNIC. It's called a shared zone system. So JPNIC basically only retains records in our resource management system. That means we don't have DNS in our site. Then when we migrated the IPv6 addresses, our system, we decided not to retain IPv6.int zone data in our system because APNIC already announced deprecation of the IPv6.int. But as Yamamoto-san said, we are one of the internet registry. We should let our customers know about this IPv6.int deprecation issue. So when we migrated IPv6 data, we counted the number of the IPv6.int zones, then notified them the zone data won't be available in June 2006 at the time of the migration. Then we did migration three times from APNIC to JPNIC. Then our first migration happened in May 14th. We migrated 55 IPv6 address blocks. Then 19 of those had IPv6.int zone. Then a second migration happened in July 4th. We migrated 9 IPv6 address blocks. Then 2 of those had IPv6.int ranges. Then a third migration happened in August last year. The only one range also had IPv6.int zones. It's a very primitive way, but we notified from our host masters to our members, LILs, about the IPv6.int deprecation. So first announcement was made from May to August last year. It's the same as the last slide. Basically, we notified each of our LIR about the IPv6.int deprecation. Then after that, we publicly announced about the IPv6.int deprecation in our JPNIC open policy meeting. Then third time we also announced to our LIRs in September about the same thing. At this time, we recommended to stop using IP6.in and migrate to IP6.ARPA. Then in December last year, we had another open policy meeting. Then we announced this issue as a part of the APNIC 20th report. And this year, we made a brief measurement by just using dig from our end to the LIR's name servers. And then our latest result was we still can dig the IP6.int zones without errors. So basically, that shows there's no improvement since migration. But obviously, the method we did had a limitation because just submitting dig request to the LIRs .ip6.in zones that do not always say exactly if the an LIR uses IP6.int or not. There's another issue. Since those IPv6 allocations are quite historical, or most of those still have zone data for /35, that's the original allocation size. So some ranges have both /35 and /32 zone data. So that makes things more complicated. Then the next step, our host master will announce to our LIRs who still uses IP6.int within this month. That's the whole status of the IP6.int issue within JPNIC area. That's it. Any questions and comments?
I have a question.
Sure.
Would you show slide whose title result? I don't know what you try to mean. This is result against query to IP6.int?
.int only.
And you said no progress is observed, right?
From the time of the migration.
But I think this is not bad situation because we don't care, no error. Because they just provide, you know, reverse mapping and IPv6.int. And after 1st June, that database cannot look up. Mm-hmm. So, but no bad thing happened. But, and JPNIC should try to use dig command to IP6.ARPA instead of IP6.int because the important thing is that, you know, each site provide reverse mapping database through IP6.ARPA or not.
Oh, so you say transition, if transition was made from IP6.int to IP6.ARPA was made or not?
We don't have to care IP6.int at this moment. That will be obsolete. Mm-hmm. Then the important thing is, you know, whether or not each site provide information through IP6.APA. So you should check IP6.APA, APA zone, right?
Right, right. Thank you for recommendation.
And can I have one question. Do you get any?
Do you get any response from LIRs? Any response or questions from LIRs?
I believe we didn't, but we will individually notify if an LIR didn't migrate from IP6.int to IP6.ARPA. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, I just want to know the LIRs have any question or any comments to the
implementation. No, we didn't. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Question. What kind of message did JPNIC send to each, you know, LIRs? My intention of the question is, we should not ask people, you know, to stop using IP6.int. That is not important. Okay. We should ask people to use IP6.APA. Okay? Stopping IP6.int is not so important. But usage of IP6.APA is very, very important. So we should ask, prepare IP6.APA in your domain zone. Okay?
Okay, I'll keep this in our mind to encourage using IP6.ARPA to our members. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, I should explain this earlier, but this is a, you know, APNIC meeting page. Okay, if you can gain access to this page, you can also watch, you know, transcript, you know. You can also see transcript over there, but if you want to have such a text online, please gain access to this page, okay? And click here. Take a little time, but you will have text here, okay? This takes time, but anyway, okay. Oops. Okay, that is all about IP6.int. Any question regarding to IP6.int? Okay, let me call next speaker. Next speaker is Hosaka-san, JPNIC. He's going to make a presentation on JPNIC IPv6 Registry Service Update Report.
Hello, everyone. My name is Toshi from JPNIC. I would like to make a short presentation regarding JPNX IPv6 registry service update. This is the overview of my presentation. First, I would like to talk about our JPNIC IPv6 statistics, and after that, I will explain our registry system update. So, statistics. This slide shows our statistics. This is the allocation made by JPNIC to our members. The blue bar shows the number of JPNIC member. As of January 2006, JPNIC has 379 members. At the same time, at January 2006, 66 members have received IPv6 allocation. So that means 17.4% of our members have received IPv6 allocation. And this is the statistics of assignments made by LIRs. The blue bar shows, the blue bar means /40 assignment to their users, and red bar shows /48 assignment to their users. This is incremental statistics. So January 2006, 904 assignments /40 assignments were made to their end users, and 58/48 assignments were made to their end users. So I would like to talk about our JPNIC registry system update. We have implemented a bulk data exchange system into our IPv6 registry system. If you use that, LIR can register their assignment, bulk assignment, to our registry system at the time. In IPv6 assignment, LIR will assign a lot of /48 or /40 or something at the same time. So we have implemented this bulk data exchange system. LIR send assignment data using SSL to our registry system, and we have also have certificate authority. So using that, we can authenticate the LIRs. This system, if I compare this system with normal email system, web transaction, bulk data exchange, has less overhead than email, and more secure than email, because this system uses SSL. And this system is already ready to provide. And one of our member is very interested in you, so we will soon begin the testing. And we have future plan. Our IPv6 registry service has not been IPv6 reachable yet, but within until the end of fiscal year 2006, our HUI server will be ready to provide IPv6 reachability, and the whole registry system will be ready until the end of fiscal year 2007. So at last, you can search our HUI server by IPv6. So So that's all for now. Any questions?
Yep. Thank you. I have a few questions. Could you show the slide of statistics of the assignment? Yeah. I want to confirm one thing. Is the APNIC statistics include this number?
I don't think so. I don't think so. This is this assignment data is registered in JPNIC who is. Okay. Is it correct?
Sim from JPNIC. Yes, we send JPNIC sends our fluids data to APNIC daily. So it should be in APNIC fluids, but there is an issue. Our data doesn't include I forgot the name of the field, but like allocated portable or assigned portable field. What is it called? Our data doesn't have that field, so that's why it may not be included in APNIC statistics.
I am prepared to be corrected, but I believe all V6 activity is done as direct assignment. So if you perform a transaction to hand something to a JPNIC member, it is automatically reflected in our registry. Whois is slightly different. Registry is our database system that we use to manage resources. So when we publish statistics, they don't come from Whois, they come from registry. And I believe the assignment report that we produce does reflect these figures, and our other measure, which is the total footprint of V6, does reflect this. That is what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And one more point, does APNIC members only do assignment? Any allocation available by JPNIC member? Yeah.
I believe the /40 assignment. It doesn't do sub allocation.
Yeah, thank you.
Or downstream allocation.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. So, next speaker is Georgi Palet, Consul Intel. He will make two presentations.
So the first presentation is to introduce a little bit some IPv6 deployment activities that we have been carrying out in Latin American Caribbean together with LACNIC. Basically, the idea of these activities have been to show the ISPs in the region, and not only ISPs but also software developers, that IPv6 is not just about more addresses, but also providing new business possibilities, because it provides a path for a possible innovation, and they can build new applications, new services that can take advantage of that and probably generate some profit. We also tried to show them that the question with IPv6 is not anymore if, but actually when you are going to do that. And the idea was to also show that it's actually better to start as soon as you can, and probably it will make the path cheaper for you, because you can adapt to your own maintenance plans, your upgrades to your network and so on, instead of trying to do it overnight and getting it very expensive. Also, going a little bit into the technical details, what we have done is basically trying to explain that you need to divide the different parts of your network to try to see how to approach this transition, and basically look into your network, which is most of the time two basic areas, like the core or the backbone and the access. In most of the cases, if you have already a very well maintained backbone, especially if you have MPLS or Ethernet technologies, you can probably do that very quickly. And most of the time, the equipment that is available in this network, it's a set most of the time, in most of the cases, good enough, modern enough, so you don't need to do practically anything, or maybe just upgrade the license or the operating system or whatever. Even most of the time, you don't need here memory upgrades, according to the experience of we have been doing with several ISPs in the region, which of course depend on the equipment that they have. But the average situation has been that case. And also in this network, in the backbones, in Latin America, we have succeeded most of the situations to upgrade the backbone in just a matter of hours, practically. In the access network, we tried to explain also that, of course, you have a different situation, because you can have dependence depending on technology or vendor in the POP equipment. For example, we know that today is not possible with DOCSIS 2.0 to offer native IPv6 services. And then the other situation typically is that you have CPE equipment which is not native or is not supporting IPv6 natively, and you don't want or you cannot do an upgrade of all the CPEs for all your customers, or even maybe not available an upgrade from the manufacturers right now. Even if this is changing very fast, there is also a very important dependence on which products you have in the field. Despite of that, of course, you can still do some transition, and the advantages, or the first advantage of IPv6, which is offering end-to-end connectivity and the related applications that can take advantage of that, it's already available. What is the result of this experience? Well, basically what is missing, it's basically training. New not necessarily means difficult, and the people is usually perceiving like that. It's something new, there is a wall of bricks, and until you don't get at least one brick out of the wall, you cannot see that after the wall there is nothing, right? So, of course, sometimes you need to consider a small or incremental upgrades on your network, on your operation and maintenance applications, and so on. But you need also to take advantage of all the new services and applications that this deployment can bring to you. So the steps that we are doing with the ISPs there is, of course, helping them, if necessary, to request the prefix, contact with their upstream providers, arrange, if necessary, a small pilot, getting up to deploy IPv6 in their network, and even when they are convinced, activated in a production stage. The contact with upstream providers, it seems that it's something obvious, but curiously, we have a lot of situations where, even if we know that the upstream provider is IPv6 capable, when somebody in a given country, for example, last week in Mexico, got contacted the upstream provider, the local people said IPv what? And obviously that means there is a lot of misinformation, especially in big carriers, because yes, they have global coverage for IPv6, but the local people is not trained enough. So in that case, we need to go back to the top people in the company and tell them, please go to your salespeople in Mexico and tell them what they need to do. And after that, we got IPv6 in that customer in a couple of hours. But we need to do that. Most of the time, if the ISPs, the local ISPs, don't have this contact at the high level in the big carrier, it's not going to happen, at least not going to happen so quickly. So what was the LACNIC situation regarding IPv6? Until June 2005, we had about 18 IPv6 prefixes allocated. Only a very reduced number of them was being announced in the routing tables. There was almost no real usage of IPv6, almost no, let's say, big interest in the region, and not any production service available. Maybe only some services in research and education networks, but actually very, very few compared with any other region in the world. So when we started this activity, basically we had one initial activity in Lima and another one in Bogota in January 2005. And then across the rest of the year, we have succeeded to train over 3,000 people. Again, not just ISPs, also application developers. That's key, because ISPs probably are not going to get the money back until there is services or applications that take advantage of that. Nobody's going to be able to charge for IPv6 because the customers don't buy IP. They just buy services and applications. And some of the results have been also creating local groups, like we call those groups IPv6 task forces in Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Mexico, Panama, Peru, Uruguay, Venezuela, and some others coming. We got from the 18 prefixes that we have in June until the end of the year, we had already 51 prefixes, and most of them are already being announced. And when I mean announced, I don't mean just getting them in the routing tables, but also making sure that there is something, some activities going on behind that announcement. And as just explained, that some of the times we need to follow the chain. For example, if a small ISP come to us to get some help, maybe this ISP is not connected directly to a big carrier, a big international carrier, Tier 1 typically, but it's connected to a medium-sized carrier from that country. So we need to convince the national carrier and then go to the upstream provider. So we did that also to get the level of achievement that we are getting. There is also a lot of good and interesting feedback from government and organizations like regulators, enterprises, developers, even a lot of information in the press related to all this deployment. So I think the result is quite interesting. One interesting figure also is this distribution of the IPv6 allocation that is done by RIPE, which shows that actually after this almost just 6 months of intensive work, right now the space available in terms of IPv6 addresses, comparing 18 versus LACNIC, is quite impressive, especially if you look at how this appears in the IPv4 world. And I didn't make the calculations, but I am sure that if I make this looking at real utilization, I mean something going on in these IPv6 addresses, the figures could be even more impressive. Let's see what happens in the next 6 months or 1 year, when I think we will probably succeed to go to at least double the number of ISPs offering service in Latin America. One additional thing that we found in this work is that if the ISPs are connected, I mean the Latin American and Caribbean ISPs are connected to upstream providers from Europe, all of them are offering native IPv6 services, and there are quite few. I am not talking about just a couple of them, but probably about 6 or 8 different upstream providers that have international service to Latin America from Europe, and they are providing native IPv6 services. But unfortunately, there are some of the ISPs in Latin America that hung up from upstream providers in US. And these upstream providers from US, basically two big ones, they don't offer IPv6 service in a very nice situations. They are only offering tunnels, and most of the time the routing is not, let's say, good enough. So what we also did is we are working together with another organization, which is OCAIT, which is providing free IPv6 transit, not competing with carriers. What we are trying to do is to, let's say, help with the first steps when not service is available from the original upstream provider. So again, we don't want to compete with carriers, but we want to complement them until they are ready to provide the service. So let's skip some steps. Basically, if you see which of these ISPs or entities like TLDs in Latin American Caribbean that got the service from OCAIT, you have a few of them, Panama, Portugal, Brazil, Guatemala, Republica Dominicana. And there is a very interesting case also is that the three ISPs that are available in Cuba, they didn't succeed to get IPv6 service because the blocking from US, they cannot connect via fiber. So we succeed to get a special permission from the North American government because there is a satellite ISP which is Colombian company but based in Miami. So using a Russian satellite, we connected them to get IPv6 service natively for all the island. So the island is actually getting a very interesting level of deployment of IPv6. Probably it's the first country in the world that will be totally connected to IPv6, an interesting thing. So for those that have interest in the OCAIT network, basically what we get is sponsored layer 2 links from different carriers. This is the network that we have. Right now we are extending the network to Europe to offer the same service to European ISPs, which don't have native service or good quality tunnels from their own upstream providers. We are trying to find also the way to extend the network to Asia Pacific and also to Africa. In Africa, actually, we have already one point of presence, which is still not on this map. Even in North America, the level of utilization of this network is becoming so interesting that part of the network, which was originally 100 megabits link, is needed to be upgraded to gigabit links because it's already being filled all the existing pipes. And I think quickly, but I am done with this presentation, so you still have 5 minutes for the other one. We can make questions at the end. Okay. So I'm probably not going to follow very much the slides, but it will be quicker to just explain what is SoftWires. SoftWires is a very recent working group in ITF. Basically, in SoftWires, what we try to do is there are still a lot of transition mechanisms, but we still don't have a good enough transition mechanisms that make the things simple. We have situations where ISPs, typically in the access network, cannot deploy today IPv6 because either the CPE, as I just explained it in the previous presentation, or the access network itself, for whatever reason, is not supporting IPv6. So what we need is to look for a way which is not expensive or even absolutely inexpensive for the ISPs and also for the customers to get IPv6 service in that situation. We have also the reverse situation. Actually, this will be the picture. We have a core network, an access network. This is the customer network. We have here dual stack in the core network. Maybe just one box is dual stack, but at least there is dual stack in one point of the network. Maybe one or several of the devices in the access network don't support IPv6, and maybe even the CP in the home network is not supporting IPv6. So what we want is to make sure that in this network, either this device, if can get upgraded to dual stack, or any device on the LANs can get easily support for dual stack. We have also the reverse situation. We have already some networks where it's convenient for whatever reasons to have all this access network or even the core network being only IPv6, but we still have some applications which require IPv4 transport. So in both cases, what we want to achieve is encapsulating either IPv4 in IPv6 or IPv6 in IPv4 in an automatic fashion. So this is what Softwires is trying to solve. These are the two possibilities. Either you have a host or you have even another CPE, which is, in this case, for example, IPv6 enabled if the network is only IPv4. And the situation is we have achieved almost a consensus in the last week interim meeting in Hong Kong that this technology is almost there. We don't need to do anything new. We have layer 2 tunneling protocol, version 2 or version 3 to achieve this result. There are some needs to solve. There are some complements. For example, there is not DHCP before prefix delegation, and that may be needed for this to work when you have several hosts in the network and the access network only supports IPv6. So more or less that's the situation with this working group. The work has progressed after many years of thinking on that in different working groups like NGTrans, for example. We have achieved probably the result in less than 6 months, and now is time to go to get the documents as RFCs, and I guess that will be really, really very quick because there is a good consensus in the working group in the way ahead. There is another case which is also being studied by this working group. It's a little bit more complicated. Actually, for example, this case is being demanded by CERNET, the China Research and Education Network, which is only getting funding to connect all the universities if the network is only IPv6. The difference with the other case is that in the previous case, the customer network has the full route, while in this case, we are talking about full BGP. It's a different situation, but it seems the solution is quite similar somehow with some BGP extensions, for example, for supporting also multicast and so on. And I think more or less that's all. Questions? No questions? I was too quick. Okay, thank you very much.
Jordi, yeah? Sorry, can I ask one question? Actually, the hub and spoke model, I'm not sure the IPv6 only core network is there is a sorry, it's not so popular. How many IPv6 only networks are there in your area?
Yeah. Well, one example of that is the Chinese Research and Education Network, but it's not the hubs and spoke. It's more complicated model, but it's also IPv6 only. Another example is at least four big networks in Europe, in addition to the DoD network in US, which are trying to make it happening because their IPv6 traffic is dominant and they have less and less IPv4 only applications which are using the network. I have a concrete example where we have deployed this in Spain with 5,000 schools. There is a similar example in Portugal with 8,500 schools, another one in Turkey, and there are some others coming. So it's not popular right now, but if you look at the long term, I guess that as soon as we have availability of devices, services, and applications which support IPv6, and the traffic becomes IPv6 dominant, it will become more more useful, because at the end, managing a dual stack network all the way may increase the operational cost. If you succeed to, in a transparent way, have in the core, in the access, both of them, or only the core or only the access, to support only IPv6, in the long term could be optimization factor, let's say.
Thank you. Well, that's all our presentations. Before we conclude this session, we should take notes again, okay? As you may know, morning tea, lunch, afternoon tea will be available, level 2, foyer, out there. Okay, next one is APNIC social event. To participate in APNIC social event, please bring your this kind of ticket, okay? Bus will leave from level 1, plaza desk. If you don't know where it is, please look at backup ticket, okay? The last bus is 19:10. So please don't miss it. Third one is my APNIC and policy flash demo is always available on APNIC help desk, okay? The help desk itself is available at break times. And lastly, we will have a special session called APNIC fee structures today. So if you are interested in, please join it. Okay, that's all. Any question or comment to this session? Or happy? Okay. Let's conclude this session with a big hand. Thank you very much.